Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode in our series, Hidden Growth Champions. Today in the studio, we have Claudia Manning, who is the investment principal at the SME Fund in South Africa. Claudia, welcome to our series, and please introduce yourself to our audiences.
Good morning, Sarah. Very nice to be on your podcast. So I'm Claudia Manning. I'm an investment principal at the SME Fund. So I've had a very diverse career in many different sectors and lots of different roles, spanning infrastructure finance, industrial policy and strategy, economic advisory, management consulting. But over all of these different experiences, I've always had a very long-standing interest in entrepreneurship. My PhD 25 years ago was on the small business sector, and I seem to keep returning to that field. So I'm currently an investment principal at the SME Fund, which was in fact set up a couple of years ago by South African corporates, specifically to promote entrepreneurship in South Africa. And my role at the moment is to provide capital to fund managers who invest in startup businesses, as well as in existing small businesses. That's me.
That's great. We'll delve into particular areas in your history, and I guess this wonderful mix or intersection between private and public sector and the various role players within this ecosystem, all focused on growing the SME sector. But let's just talk about the SME Fund for a bit. Just tell us a little bit more about what is it about? What's the vision that's propelling it? What is it trying to become? What's the vision that its principals saw at the beginning that you're driving towards?
So the fund was set up about 3 years ago, and it was set up as a partnership between 50 of the largest listed corporates in South Africa, together with the PIC. And it was a partnership between the private sector and government to promote entrepreneurship. So if I take you back a couple of years ago, when South Africa at the time was facing a downgrade, business and the Minister of Finance at the time got together to discuss what are the initiatives that we could embark upon to try and prevent the downgrade. And a couple of initiatives were started, and one of them was an effort to promote entrepreneurship in South Africa. And so Adrian Gore, who's our chairman, was appointed to lead the effort. And out of that came the SME Fund. So it's a relatively small fund. We have 1.4 billion rand that we can invest. And we started in earnest about 2 years ago. And as of about May this year, the fund has been fully committed. We're very pleased about that. And we've invested in sort of, I guess, two broad areas. One is in supporting existing businesses with debt and equity, and then in venture capital. So we're a fund of funds, so we're not direct investors into entrepreneurs. We support fund managers or debt providers. So we've supported 13 of those. Six of those are in the growth space, and seven of them are in the venture capital sector. So our fund is now currently committed, and we're in the process of raising a new fund, which will specifically be a venture capital focused fund of funds.
No. That's interesting, Claudia. I mean, when I think of it, we see more and more funds trying to focus. They either become early stage investors, middle stage, late stage, or even focusing more on private equity or expansion capital, as it were. You've taken the approach of becoming the funder of various funds and providing an opportunity both for early stage as well as late stage development. Give us a little bit of the thinking behind this. It's really sounds like an kind of an integrated approach, making sure that entrepreneurs, idea generators, innovators can actually be supported along the journey. And that's not an easy task, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, South Africa has a remarkably immature early stage funding environment for an economy of our size and complexity. We have precious little being invested in the VC space. I mean, just to give you a sense, in 2018, when the last survey was done by SAVCA, we had about $1.5 billion that had been invested in that previous year in VC. Whilst that's I mean, it's a big improvement. I mean, it's grown 3 or 4 times over the last 4 years. However, if you compare to other economies with much stronger VC ecosystems, for example, Kenya, with an economy that's probably a fifth of our size, they had double the amount invested in VC. So our industry is still nascent. It is growing, and that's really great news, but it is, you know, it's relatively small for an economy of, you know, of the size of ours. And so it's clear that we need to do a lot more to both broaden the industry and deepen it. And by that, what I mean is we need more players, and we need players with more depth and more heft who are capable of you know, of providing more substantial support to particularly to early stage businesses. And so what we found, if you look at the VC ecosystem in South Africa, there are remarkably few credible fund managers who, you know, who've got a track record, who have invested, who've exited, who kind of know the landscape, who've got, you know, a good radar to be able to assess risk and assess potential. And then in addition to the small size of, you know, the number of fund managers, we also have very few who are capable of writing larger checks to help portfolio companies to scale up. So if you're a South African startup at the moment and you're looking for a, let's say, a 50 million or 100 million rand check, it's hard. It's really hard to find a VC fund manager with that kind of depth to be able to, you know, to play in that space. So the SA SME Fund identified the VC sector as one that we thought we could make a real difference in growing, because although we have a relatively small fund, we've become probably the largest institutional investor in VC in the last 2 years. And that's not because we had a lot of money to invest, but simply because there's so little, you know, other funding that is available. And we think that it's absolutely essential if we're going to grow the South African economy, which is, you know, was stagnant even before COVID, and, you know, is now looking like it's going to probably shrink by, you know, upwards of 10%. If we're going to find levers to grow it, we've got to invest in the innovation economy. And I'm sure you'll agree from, you know, from the work that you guys do, the correlation between investing in venture capital and early stage businesses and innovation is a very strongly positive one. So we really think that it's an exciting opportunity for the country, and we hope to become a, you know, an important player in that space.
Oh, that's great. Certainly we find in our work, and it's something that we call the innovation premium, whether organizations are trying to respond through internal means, through fostering innovation internally within their organization, or explicitly going out and finding the talent, the capabilities, the partnering outside of their organization. And very often it's a mix of those. They are similar, what we term enduring behaviors. There's a certain mindset that's required to operate effectively within that bigger ecosystem. You can't simply think of yourself and your objectives and what you're specifically trying to achieve. You've got to think of the bigger purpose. You need to think of how you enlist others to see the potential in what you're trying to create. And there is ultimately a commercial proposition there, both for funders as well as entrepreneurs and innovators. So it's a fascinating area. The upside that we see to it, though, or in addition to it, I should rather say, is that there is in fact a premium, that organizations are struggling to achieve the kind of growth, the kind of breakthroughs without deliberately tackling innovation, and particularly doing it within an ecosystem. So I think for us, the COVID crisis has simply surfaced something that was there before, I guess very similar to what you were saying, and getting us to, or propelling us to innovate even more. It'd be very interesting to see a few years down the line of how this has panned out, if we had something like a crystal ball to look into. Claudia, I did want to ask a very related question, and that's around the other players in the ecosystem. So when we think about innovators, when we think about making South Africa Inc. more innovative and getting various players to participate in it, one starts to think about who plays in that ecosystem, who adds value to that ecosystem, who's becoming a catalyst in it. And within that, one of the roles that we have to talk about is the role of the state, right? One of the writers that I truly enjoy reading is a lady by the name of Mariana Mazzucato, the economist based in the UK, who wrote The Entrepreneurial State. In some quarters, not the most, I guess, popular book, because she's debunked the myth that innovation is something that happens only in the private sector, that it's something that states at best need to be neutral towards and allow it to happen and not interfere in. And her thesis is different, that the state actually is a proactive and a very necessary player in innovation, in creating the entrepreneurial state. And she provides examples right from developed economies like the US and the UK and some of the European Union members, and well into emerging markets as well. So give us a little bit of a sense of how do you see the role of the state in fostering this kind of innovation, the kind that we so sorely need in this country at this point in time?
You know, I'm a big fan of her work, and I think she makes an absolutely legitimate point that it is not simply the private sector, but often it is, in many cases, it is the state that has enabled economies to become really innovative. You asked, you know, what are the sort of ingredients of success? And for me, they're sort of probably, other than government, which I'll come to in a moment, three things that you need to be in place to have a vibrant innovation economy. You need capital, and you need providers of capital who will back startups and make sure that they've got the right kind of capital for the stage of their business. You need good fund managers who have hopefully, you know, done the full cycle. They've invested, they've made some poor investments, they've done some good exits, they've learned their lessons, they've raised a second fund, they've therefore got a, you know, much more solid base of experience. The third thing that you need is good accelerators, good bodies that are capable of working with entrepreneurs to help them to build their entrepreneurial skills, to help them to figure out where the blind spots are, how to help them to scale their businesses up. Something that we, in South Africa, we have many institutions that call themselves incubators and accelerators. Unfortunately, most of them actually don't do very good work. There are a few like Grindstone that we at the SASME Fund support that we think does really excellent work in helping to grow startups to scale to their full potential. Professor Mazzucati says, the role of government is absolutely instrumental in building up the foundations of an innovation and economy that invests in startups and early stage businesses. And I mean, when we started looking at raising a new venture capital funds, we looked at, you know, how have other countries done it, and what have been the ingredients that have contributed towards successful innovation economies. And I mean, it was absolutely apparent from, you know, the few countries that we looked at, that in every one of those economies, government was there at the beginning playing a really important role. So I mean, the Israeli economy is sort of most famous for its sort of high level of investment in venture capital. 15% of GDP is made up of the VC industry, and you can trace a large part of the current very vibrant VC industry to a couple of decisions that were made by governments in the early 90s, setting up the Yozma Fund. If you look at, I mean, it was $100 million that they invested at the time. They invested in, I think it was 8 or 10 VC fund managers, all of whom exited profitably and raised new funds. And if you look at the current industry, a lot of the roots can be traced back to, you know, to the role that government played then. But beyond that, I mean, Brazil over the last sort of 20 years have been making a much more strongly conscious effort to invest in growing an innovation and VC economy. And they did a few, the public sector did a couple of really important interventions that helped to stimulate that economy. So for example, there were public programs just to educate the pension fund industry, which was a huge part of where capital was located, but had sort of no appetite for investing in early stage businesses. And so, you know, over a couple of years, there were a series of platforms that were created to link the pension funds together with fund managers and startups, and it was very successful in that over the next couple of years you saw a huge upswing in the amount of investment from pension funds into the VC economy. They also created a fund similar to the one that we hope to set up, where the public sector took a first loss position in the new fund, and therefore enabled private sector investors to get more of the upside. And if you go through, I mean, many, many examples through Europe and obviously the US, you know, with the startup of Silicon Valley, you can see government's hands all over it. I mean, what's really encouraging, Sai, is that the South African government has recognized that it's important for the public sector to be, you know, to be part of the growth of the VC industry. And so we've had a few conversations with a group of institutions that are looking to set up a sovereign innovation fund in South Africa. And we hope that would, you know, play a similarly important role in helping to sort of really substantially grow our VC economy.
This is really encouraging, and it's wonderful to see how we talk about talent knows no borders, and in a very similar light, the need and the response therefore to developing an early stage economy and the innovation that goes with it, the innovation it unleashes, knows no borders as well, and we can learn from others' experience, and equally they can learn from ours. This is really exciting to hear. I want to talk a little bit about the fund of funds. One of the things that that often alludes to, and I think you made mention of it a few times in our conversation so far, is the element of blended finance and the role that particular funders would take in order for a bigger win, in order for the fund itself to be successful. And to overcome what might be some of the early stage volatility. So talk to us a little bit about you know, blended finance, and it's certainly something that has become, that's spoken about more openly and it's being practiced more and more. What do you see as blended finance becoming? What role do you see taking when it comes to developing the innovation economy?
I mean, we think that it's really going to be the only way that we can thoroughly and substantially and sustainably seed a relatively new industry. And by that, what we mean is because VC is considered to be very high risk, which I think is not necessarily accurate, but that certainly is the perception. It's very, very difficult to persuade private investors who are purely seeking commercial returns, to back the industry and to become the sort of sole investors in it. If we can attract investors who have an eye on returns, but who also have a very strong interest in impact, in innovation, in kind of longer term objectives, who may be prepared to sacrifice some of their returns in exchange for these development impacts, or in exchange for longer term economic growth. Putting these two sources of finance, the returns and the impact seeking investors, together in one financial structure, we've seen in many, many countries, can be a very effective way of attracting the more risk averse investors into a sector that they would otherwise possibly just avoid altogether. And so that's exactly what we're hoping to do with the new fund of funds that we're raising. So the intention is to raise a couple of different tiers of government funding. The first tier would be pure private sector investors, and we're hoping that some of our current investors, some of the pension funds, might invest in the fund of funds. The second tier is first loss investors, and those are the investors who are prepared to basically earn no returns, because they are prepared to take the first loss if the funds, at a portfolio level, fail to perform. And then we're hoping to bring in some government grant funding as well, which will allow us to do some of the softer work around accelerating businesses and growing pipelines, et cetera. And we think that if you bring these different sort of tiers of investors into a fund, you will be able to raise a larger fund. You'll be able to bring a class of investors that would be typically quite averse to, putting their toes into the water of what they consider to be high risk. And I think that way, we hope that we will be able to raise a fund that will both broaden the industry, and as I said before, deepen it, and allow fund managers to build the capacity to be able to write larger checks, to be able to really scale up good South African startups, not just in South Africa, but internationally as well.
Mm. There's a role that you keep on alluding to, and I just want to put a name to it, I guess, and check with you. And it's something that we see in our work as well, and that is the role of a mentor. It almost sounds like, in whether you spoke about the Israeli experience in the 1990s or more recently, what you and your team are doing at the moment, it alludes to whether it's a person or very often an organization, it takes on the role of mentoring the ecosystem, whether it's explicitly by taking on that more risky positions, by scaling back on the potential upside for them for the sake of the ecosystem taking hold, or whether it's done more implicitly by spurring on, by connecting other investors, by showing the opportunity. And I guess where this hits home for me is very much in our work. You know, mentors are you know, they can't simply be nominated. You can't force someone to become a mentor. It is really their recognition, their vision, their appreciation for what could be developed if they had to participate, if they had to contribute. They don't need to be called mentors. They would just play a more proactive role within the ecosystem until they feel that the ecosystem has taken hold, until they feel that it's reached a stage that it starts to resemble the kind of vision that they had for it. And it sounds to me almost that the kind of exercise that you're involved in requires that mentorship role, because not everyone are going to be equally mature about this. Not everyone are going to be equally enthusiastic about developing this kind of ecosystem.
You know, the beauty of a venture capital fund manager is that they have no choice but to be fully involved in the growth of the businesses that they've invested in. So typically, a relatively small VC fund will make no more than a dozen, maybe even less than that, investments. And they know that a good portion of those will produce average or even below average returns. Mm-hmm. And maybe two or three will produce, you know, exceptional, we hope, exceptional returns. And their job is to make sure that they give every one of those businesses an opportunity to become the high flyer. And so during the life of their investment, which is usually somewhere between 7 and 10 years, what one of our fund managers calls it is full body contact. You work so closely with those businesses because you are so invested for your, you know, for the fund manager's financial returns to be achieved. They need to work really, really closely. So it's a kind of it's built into the, you know, into the very model. And so if you as a startup, are the recipient of VC investment, you are going to get the capital, which is great, which is why you went to them in the first place. But what's important is that you're going to get the mentorship, you're going to get the access to markets, the access to the fund managers' networks. And we see this with all of our fund managers. There's none of this kind of hands-off approach that says, you know, we've given you the capital and we'll pitch up at a board meeting in 3 months and hear how you're doing. We see them helping to helping the startup to fundraise, helping them get access to markets, linking them up with all of the networks that are required to get these businesses to grow. And we've taken a very similar approach at the SASME Fund in that, you know, we've got 13 fund managers that we back, and we're a very active participant in those businesses. I mean, we work very closely to help them to get other investors. We help to see if we can identify potential pipeline for them to consider, etc. And so we think that intrinsic to the model is the link between just capital, but also the other sort of services that the ecosystem needs for these startups to really reach their potential.
Mm. No, very, very much so. And you know, it's often very interesting. And when we go about mapping an ecosystem, the first response we often get is, we didn't all realize of all the different role players that there are. The obvious few obviously pop up in the first few moments, but often after a while, the unconventional role players start to pop up. The hidden mentors start to pop up. So it's really interesting to see as and you called it very nicely, full body contact, as that type of behavior gets exercised, the different players come to the fore and can contribute in different ways, whether it's on the technical side, whether it's more on the commercial organizational side, or whether it's on the funding side. Claudia, one related point that I just wanted to check with you was kind of local versus the international aspect of this. In some of our earlier conversations, we spoke about other early stage ecosystems that were built in urban centers, whether I think of the city of London, for example, or I think of Berlin, or I'm thinking more recently of Singapore and their work, particularly in fintech as well as in the energy sector. One of the things that really became kind of starkly clear to us is the fact that talent has no borders, is the fact that we actually don't know where the next innovation is going to come from. All we know is that we provide the right conditions, more often than not, the right ones will appear. And we have a good process to screen, test, support those until they reach maturity, and knowing that many of them won't in the process, and that's an inherent part of that process. So if I had to ask you, you know, in building a South African ecosystem that's vibrant, that's open to the world, that can solve global problems, not just unique South African problems, how do you strike that balance between developing the local and connecting with the global?
So we think that it's important for our startups to kind of prove their model where they can, and often that is where they are located, and that would be in South Africa. But what for these businesses to really scale up, they need to be built for markets that are broader than just South Africa. I mean, we are still a relatively small economy in the African context and in the international context. And so if a business is built entirely for South Africa, that's great if it's solving a South African problem. But for it to become, you know, a real international player, it needs to be able to prove that it can solve problems not just for this economy, but for others. And we've seen, you know, over the years, a number of really exciting South African companies that have scaled and that have been acquired by international companies. And I have no doubt that that some of the startups that are in our SME fund kind of portfolio through our fund managers, there are a number of those that show similar capacity to scale and to solve problems, whether it's around agriculture, machine learning for manufacturing, health problems, education issues, that they've got the ability to solve not just local problems, but global ones as well. And so I mean, I think that your point is absolutely valid, and I think we're going to see over the next few years many of our startups proving that they have the ability to do precisely that.
If I had to ask you greatest successes along the journey so far, the things that stick out in your mind as those, which one would you say is top of mind?
So I think that we very, as the SAASME Fund, very proud of the fact that in a short space of time, we have become a very substantial player in a nascent industry. We like to think that we have breathed some new life into the industry and importantly, a substantial chunk of capital into VC. And we think that it sets us up very well to continue to play that role. And we hope that when we raise the new fund, that we will build an even more sustainable industry that will be able to subsist, you know, whether or not the SAASME fund, you know, is raising another fund, but that they will be able, that these fund managers would have, through the work that we've done over the last couple of years, be able to demonstrate a strong enough track record that they'll be able to raise private sector funding, global funding, not just from South Africa, et cetera. So we're pleased about, I mean, it's early days, we're pleased about the role that we've been able to play. And we hope that we can use that set of skills and experience and networks that we've built to be able to cement an industry that we think in 10 years' time could become, you know, a really exciting source of innovation, of employment, and of growth.
And if I had to ask you, as any innovator would know, there are also those dark days, those days when things do not go to plan, the exact opposite. Any of those that you want to share with us?
It's early days, Sarah. So I'm happy to say we haven't had dark days yet. When we struggled to persuade investors into our new fund of funds that, you know, VC is worth taking a risk on, because investing in VC is not doesn't require trading off returns with impact, but that you can actually make money and do good. And when people don't hear us and say, nah, we're not interested in VC, that kind of sucks and we feel a little bit despondent, but then we get up the next day and we keep trying. So not too many bad days yet, but we're optimistic that that we can keep too many of them away.
I can definitely kind of spot a learning mindset in there, kind of go back and say, how do we do this better?
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. And any lessons you want to share with innovators out there, whether they are in big corporates, thinking of the next big solution, thinking of the problems that really require a different approach, or whether they are early stage innovators, or even fund managers out there that are thinking, you know, should I get involved? How do I contribute to this nascent ecosystem? And any lessons and any insights you want to share with them that will be helpful?
So I mean, one of our big hopes is that more and more smart young South Africans decide consciously to embrace the world of entrepreneurship, start up new businesses, use, you know, the knowledge and experience and networks that they've gained from the corporate world that they've been in for a few years, and use that to, you know, to start a new business. One of the biggest pitfalls that we've seen with entrepreneurs who start up is that they become professional fundraisers, often pursuing soft funding, which is of course, you know, can be helpful. But if you don't know what your market is and where your revenue is going to come from, chasing soft money is a lethal poison. It's ill-disciplined. It doesn't set the business up to scale. It, you know, builds businesses that are kind of reliant on handouts rather than on on revenue from paying customers. And so, you know, lesson number one would be make sure your revenue model is absolutely clear and focus on that rather than on constantly fundraising, particularly from soft sources. The second thing I'd say is that, you know, your team is everything. Entrepreneurs on their own, as we've said before, can never do it all on their own. They need to have a team around them. And the best team that you can possibly afford is the team that you need to be going after. So make sure that you invest in, you know, in the right people around you who can, you know, help to grow your business to reach your proper potential. And then the last thing I'd say is that it's hard. It's a really, really hard road. Entrepreneurship is, you know, is not easy. The exciting part is, you know, when you decide to start the business, and then it gets really, really tough. Make sure you've got the right support system in place so that you can ride the dark days and hopefully emerge, you know, triumphant on the other side.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Claudia. This is such a nice conversation. It's good to hear the SASME Fund involved in such a meaningful way. We're certainly going to be on the lookout for your fund of funds and your activities as you develop the ecosystem further. Thanks again for participating in this conversation.
It's an absolute pleasure, Sam.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.